Welcome to the Divided Kingdom News Program. Elizabeth Cupid Cavalli and I, Lou Cavalli, have been bringing you this hard-hitting program since 2003. Tonight, we present Thanksgiving News, Blitz 1, The Good, The Bad, The Ugly. Before we get to the news, we have a reminder. Our book, COVID and Coming Chaos, is still available, free of charge. It will make a great Christmas gift. Just write to me and request it. To me, Lou Cavalli, at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And if you can include a little bit of a small amount of money, maybe $5 for a postage, that would be great. And again, the address is myself, Lou Cavalli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And we can also use some help to keep us on the air. If you can help us, just send perhaps $50 or $100 or whatever you are able to donate. You can send cash or a money order. Or if a check, you can make it out to WWCR and mail it to that same address, Lou Cavalli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And we thank you in advance for any help that you're able to give us. Now, we start with the news. First, the bad. That is, it's bad for Bill Gates, his goal to transform our world. But it's good for all of us. Here we have from the People's Voice, Bill Gates seeking government subsidies as fake meat company faces bankruptcy. October 21st, 2024. Again from the People's Voice by Sean Adel Tabatabai. Bill Gates' carcinogenic lab-grown meat business has proven to be such a spectacular failure that the billionaire is now begging governments to subsidize his fake meat companies to keep them afloat. Preliminary data from the venture capital firm Ag Funder shows that funding in the fake meat sector fell by 78% in 2023, reaching $177 million, down from $807 million in 2022, and its peak of $989 million in 2021. NaturalNews.com reports, in response to the steep drop in investments, many lab meat startups have been slashing staff members and consolidating operations, while others are closing their doors entirely. Now they want taxpayers to shoulder the burden of helping them right the ship after taking a chance on something that many of us knew from the beginning was doomed to fail. At the Future Food Tech Innovation Summit that was recently held in London, cultivated meat industry reps insisted the governments need to get on board. MOSA, that's M-O-S-A, Meat Vice President of Global Public Affairs, Robert Jones, warned that, quote, there's a valley of death we're not going to cross as an industry without a massive infusion of public investment, unquote. For example, Poland recently gave a 2 million euro grant to a company producing cultured meat. In 2022, the Dutch government announced it would give $65 million of public funding to support meat cultivation from cells and the production of animal-friendly dairy. Proponents of alternative proteins have complained that the USDA has only put $124 million towards subsidizing them, while the USDA has given the livestock operators subsidies of more than $59 billion. Once touted as a solution to everything from global warming to hunger, it is becoming more and more difficult to ignore the serious flaws in the lab-grown meat. Not only is it not quite as environmentally friendly as its producers want us to think, but the health risks it poses could be significant. Food consultant Julian Mullenton said, quote, it's going to go down as one of the biggest failures in food history. Business schools will be presenting lessons on lab-grown meat, unquote. The process of creating lab-grown meat requires very expensive nutrients and exacting lab conditions. and its production process, which supporters initially claimed reduced CO2 emissions compared to livestock farming, has been shown to increase emissions by anywhere from 4 to 25 times those of traditional meat, not to mention the fact that cows enhance the land they graze on. In addition, the effects of consuming this non-food on human health are not known, and it will take many years before the long-term risks it poses become apparent. However, an even more pressing problem for lab-grown meat is the lack of demand, with many consumers turning up their nose at the thought of eating this Frankenfood. Melanton noted, quote, "Even the test marketing has stopped because nobody wanted the product. It's just too weird. People are very reluctant to put a technology into their bodies," unquote. Florida and Alabama have already banned the sales of cultivated meat and seafood, while Iowa schools are prohibited from buying it. It's also expected to be restricted, at least to some degree, at the federal level. Internationally, French lawmakers have introduced a bill banning the meat, while Italy has already implemented a ban on selling it. Much like many of the other so-called green initiatives that aren't the great alternatives they pretend to be, such as electric vehicles, lab-grown meat is failing to live up to its promises, and it's proving to be worse than the traditional meat it hopes to replace in every possible way. Now, there's lots of bad in the good, bad and ugly. November headlines. Try this one. LifeSite News. Baltimore spending millions on sex ed program to promote abortion, gender transitions to children. Baltimore has received $15 million from the federal government for You Choose. That's the letter U and then the word choose. It's a Planned Parenthood-linked sex ed initiative that promotes abortion and mutilating gender transitions to children without parental consent. This is by Bridget C. Licky. Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024, Baltimore, live action. A taxpayer-funded, quote, sex education, unquote, program that partners Baltimore City Schools with Planned Parenthood and other agencies has come under fire with a report which details the fact that the program may refer minors for abortions and transgender practices. The initiative, called You Choose, is billed as a program, quote, with the goal of drastically reducing teen birth and STI rates through sex education and what it calls youth-friendly reproductive services, unquote. The You Choose website promotes a variety of so-called services to city youth, including referrals to abortion facilities, as well as puberty blockers and pro-transgender, quote-unquote, care, including how to access these things without parental notification. According to WCBM, the Baltimore City Health Department has received $15 million for You Choose since 2015 from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program, a federal program that provides funding to universities, healthcare groups, government entities, and local chapters of Planned Parenthood. You Choose is projected to receive another $7.3 million from 2025 to 2028, with the goal of targeting, quote, black, Hispanic, and white youth ages 15 to 24. As Fox 45 News reports, You Choose recommends a number of facilities, including Planned Parenthood Baltimore City Health Center, which offer abortions, transgender hormones, and transgender surgery referrals, as well as the University of Maryland Adolescent Clinic, which provides hormone blockers, transgender hormones, and references for transgender surgeries. The You Choose program boasts that it reaches over 10,000 youth each year. A spokeswoman for the Baltimore City Health Department clarified that the agency doesn't commit abortions, but did say that, quote, counseling is offered to anyone seeking information about reproductive health options, unquote, and that information would be given regardless of gender identity. The spokeswoman told Fox 45 News, quote, our goal is to ensure that everyone has access to the resources and support they need to make informed decisions about their health, unquote. Live Action News has long documented the connection between Planned Parenthood and sex ed programs nationwide. The abortion business is eager to push a message of sexuality with no strings attached to minors, with the knowledge that this message keeps teens walking through the doors for contraception and abortion. Quote, these programs are created to teach children about sexuality in order for them to become sexually active, explained former Planned Parenthood Family Planning Training Manager Monica Klein in 2021. She went on to say, these programs are about sexualizing children and leading them to abortion. That is what sex education is. Comprehensive sexuality education is all about grooming children and using it as a marketing tool to lead to abortion. And more saddening news, shocking bad news. The People's Voice, top pediatrician warns COVID vaccines are inducing Alzheimer's disease in children. October 20th, 2024, by Baxter Dimitri. Dr. David, a board-certified pediatrician in Florida and former FDA advisor during the COVID-19 vaccine rollout, has raised concerns over a groundbreaking new study from Korea that links mRNA COVID-19 vaccines to an increased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, including in children. Alzheimer's disease is a progressive brain disorder that causes the brain to shrink and leads to the death of brain cells, characterized by memory loss, confusion, and difficulty with problem solving. The disease eventually worsens over time, leading to a debilitating loss of independence. This study, entitled The Potential Association Between COVID Vaccinations and the Development of Alzheimer's Disease, was published in the Journal of Pathology, Microbiology, and Immunity, and involved 600,000 participants. The Korean researchers divided patients into two groups for the study, those who received the COVID-19 vaccine and those who did not. They specifically searched for ICD codes, medical codes used for insurance reimbursement, that indicated Alzheimer's disease or its precursor, mild cognitive impairment. The study also included control groups that looked for Parkinson's disease and vascular dementia to compare against the Alzheimer's-related findings. The results were alarming. There was a significant increase in both mild cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's disease in individuals who received COVID-19 mRNA vaccines, but no similar increase was found in those with Parkinson's disease or vascular dementia. Dr. David emphasized the significance of these findings, pointing out that the risk was particularly high in those who received mRNA-based vaccines. Dr. David stated, quote, this is a pretty significant finding. He emphasized the importance of further research. He noted that the key question now is whether the development of Alzheimer's is specifically related to the spike protein targeted by the immune system after vaccination, or if it's tied to the mRNA technology itself. The spike protein, which forms on the outer surface of the COVID-19 virus, is the target of the immune response triggered by the vaccine. The immune system creates antibodies against this spike protein to prevent further infections. However, the study's findings raise important questions about whether this immune response or the mRNA mechanism used to deliver the vaccine might contribute to cognitive decline in some individuals, including children. As more data emerge, this study highlights the need for further investigation into the potential long-term effects of COVID-19 vaccines, especially in relation to neurological disorders like Alzheimer's disease. And now, also under the News Blitz category of bad, comes this latest update from Lindsay, Oklahoma, from Natural News, October 22nd, 2024, by Ethan Huff. Double standard. Oklahoma bank fails. FDIC only insures half of uninsured depositors. But last year, FDIC insured all of Silicon Valley Bank's uninsured depositors. Another American bank has collapsed, this time in Oklahoma. On Friday, October 18th, 2024, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, shut down the First National Bank of Lindsay, which had been failing to maintain its capital requirements. Again, this is in Oklahoma. According to reports, the First National Bank of Lindsay had been keeping, quote, bogus and disingenuous, unquote, bank documents that ultimately exposed a major deficiency at the financial institution. Simply put, the value of the bank assets was less than its creditor obligations. Unlike what happened to Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, last year, the FDIC is only covering 50% of uninsured depositors' funds. The FDIC covered 100% of uninsured depositors' funds at SVB, by comparison. The FDIC said in a statement, quote, for uninsured depositors, the FDIC has announced it will make 50% of those funds available to depositors starting Monday, October 21st, 2024, with the possibility of increasing that amount in, as assets from the failed bank are sold, unquote. First National Bank of Lindsay. Now, this is a Twitter note that someone has put in. Someone who calls themselves Nobody Special. That person says, First National Bank of Lindsay, Oklahoma has failed. Tens of millions were lost, assumed stolen. And one man is dead in this sleepy little town where money has a habit of disappearing. And ordinary people are always left holding the bag. And the next subheadline, laws are for poor people. The rich always get bailed out with U.S. tax dollars. To be clear, uninsured deposits are not supposed to receive anything from the FDIC. That's why they're called uninsured. In this case, and in the case of Silicon Valley Bank, however, there are apparently some exceptions to that rule. If you were someone who is rich and powerful, as were the depositors at SVB, then you are entitled to full restitution in the event of your uninsured deposits disappearing due to a bank failure. At the First National Bank of Lindsay, Oklahoma, the government decided that uninsured depositors should receive half of their money back. Writes Stan Szymanski for Encouraging Angels, quote, people, that is billionaires, and businesses with as much as $500 million on deposit, such as SVB, were bailed out by the government last year. Is this new assertion by the FDIC to only insure 50% of uninsured deposits an indication of future unwillingness to make these large depositors whole? What does this say for the actual stability of the U.S. banking system when the response to one modest bank in Oklahoma being taken over changes how the insurers, and that's in quote, insurers of the system react, unquote. The answer to these questions remains unknown, of course, since the government is no longer beholden to the will of we the people, for whom it is supposed to work. The FDIC apparently makes up new rules on the fly depending on whose wealth is at risk. The First National Bank of Lindsay, by the way, only has one office location. It is small fry compared to the thousands of other U.S. banks that in the coming days are likely to suffer a similar outcome. Will there be enough money to reimburse everyone who loses as a result? The answer is, of course not, which means things are about to get really ugly. Szymanski writes further, quote, things appear to be changing, and for the American people, it appears to mean more uncertainty amongst a backdrop of national uneasiness and disgust in the collective reverberation to recent political responses to tragedy. Food, water, energy, shelter, protection, communications, and consideration of the acquisition of precious metals for the average person looms larger than ever, unquote. How much longer will it be before America's Ponzi scheme economy bites the dust? Learn more at collapse.news. Well, the next two stories, time permitting, about a factory CEO and one about the government's enabling a lethal force against American citizens. These are not just bad in the extreme. They fit the category of ugly. Ugly personified. This one from Natural News. Factory CEO left workers to drown during Hurricane Helene, lawsuit claims, while the boss evacuated. The CEO of a factory ordered his workers to stay inside their facility and continue working to meet targets and deadlines as Hurricane Helene devastated the rural town of Irwin in Tennessee. In the end, of the 11 employees who were swept away by the raging floodwaters, 5 were rescued. 4 were missing, and 2 were confirmed dead. And I believe I said this was from Natural News by Bell Carter, and it's dated October 22nd, 2024. Johnny Peterson, 55 years old, was one of the 2 workers at Impact Plastics, who were now confirmed dead from the flooding. He drowned in the flooded factory on September 27th. His family is suing the company and its CEO, claiming that the bosses sneaked out of the factory to escape catastrophic weather conditions while they ordered employees to stay. According to an explosive 28-page lawsuit filed by Peterson's family in Tennessee state court, Impact Plastics had no required plan to safely evacuate employees, even though the plant was located in a floodplain and regularly experienced water creeping into the parking lot. Says Zach Lawson, the family's attorney, in a statement to the Knox News, quote, based on information we've uncovered, including accounts from surviving employees, we believe this tragedy could have been avoided. Impact Plastics was aware of the flood risks, and while employees requested permission to leave, the company failed to act. We will hold them accountable. As per the suit, the managers denied employees' pleas to leave work despite receiving notification from the National Weather Service around 10 a.m., which urged all who could to evacuate to higher ground. 30 minutes later, the company managers told employees to move their cars because the parking lot was flooded. An hour later, at 11:35 a.m., senior management, including the founder and CEO, Gerald O'Connor, had, quote, stealthily exited the building, unquote, according to court papers. Following this, the workers thought that they were dismissed since local schools and other businesses had announced closures because of the hurricane. However, the same managers instructed them to continue working because the company, quote, wanted to meet order deadlines, unquote, court documents further indicated. They were only sent home when the floods already reached the plant's parking lot and the power went out. Peterson was able to step outside, but he then went back into the building to help employees, quote, trapped inside, unquote. Sadly, he eventually became trapped himself after the water made it impossible to leave by car. He was able to climb onto the bed of a semi-trailer, attempting to escape the area. Quote, he managed to type out, and this is the quote, he texted his daughter for the last time at 1:17 p.m. I love you all. Karen should type that up, but that was the last text Alexa Peterson received from her father. According to the latest reports, another person from the factory was still missing after being washed away. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, TBI, and the Tennessee Occupational Safety and Health Administration, TOSHA, immediately launched a probe on Impact Plastics concerning its 11 employees who were washed away by floodwaters back in September. Earlier in September, I make that October, O'Connor released a video statement about a preliminary internal review of what happened in the facility that week. O'Connor, again, he was the CEO, I believe, started the video by saying that he and his family have been receiving death threats. This is a quote. "The flood of September 27th took from our Impact Plastics family some great employees. One was a personal friend of more than 30 years of working together," said the CEO. He continues by saying that he ordered an immediate review of the events and timeline of what occurred at Impact Plastics on the day of the flooding. Quote, "The findings are that the employees were told to leave the plant at least 45 minutes before the gigantic force of the flood hit the industrial park. There was time to escape," O'Connor claimed. "Employees were not told at any time that they would be fired if they left the plant." Unquote. He also said that after checking to make sure that everyone was out of the plant and grabbing important files, he was one of the last to leave the plant and escape. "To our knowledge, no one died," and this is in quotes, "no one died while on company property," he said. He ends the video by saying that his company will cooperate fully with reviews from the TBI and TOSHA, and that the company's focus is on its employees. O'Connor said, quote, "Thank you for your hard work as we all try to recover from this tragedy. I fell in love with Irwin and the people back in 1987 as a home for Impact Plastics. My plan is to build back our business in this town that I love as quickly as we can and offer good jobs to the people who live there." Unquote. Former Impact Plastics employee Robert Jarvis said that he's not happy with this company's version of events. Jarvis said, quote, "I wish he would take some accountability for his actions because we shouldn't have been there that day at all. It hurt me to see him up there trying to make himself look like he's all innocent." Unquote. And then we have 600 service members suddenly dropped dead after taking COVID-19 drug remdesivir. This was by Bradley Greer on DISSWIRE, DISSWIRE.com. Over 500, make that 600, service members died suddenly after being given the drug remdesivir by doctors, despite it not being approved by the FDA to fight COVID-19. A military whistleblower leaked explosive documents in the Department of Defense Joint Trauma System, revealing that the deadly drugs were administered to service members regardless of its official FDA approval. The whistleblower, who chose to remain anonymous under the pseudonym Daniel LeMay, gave the documents over to journalist J.M. Phelps. While discussing the contents of the documents, LeMay explained that the initial trial, and this is in quotes, "the initial trial depicted data manipulation in favor of remdesivir." And he noted, "the primary issue is with patient data. If we can't verify the placebo, then we can't determine the actual efficacy of remdesivir." Unquote. Between March 2020 and March 2024, 941 military service members died, with 63.9% of them taking remdesivir, the data shows. And now we're going to move on to some information about food and depopulation.
Thank you so much, Lou. And now let's find out the new information about the pork.
And as Elizabeth said, this was sent to us by a listener who was concerned and felt that we needed to know this information. It's entitled, and I believe it's from some sort of a farm journal, it's entitled "Adverse Effects of Pork on Health." At risk of creating an uproar and alienating good folks who farm swine, I hope to convey some of the latest research and findings of noted professor Hans-Heinrich Rekweg, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name
and let's
correctly.
Spell his last name, Lou.
Yes, his last name is spelled R-E-C-K-E-W-E-G. Hans-Heinrich Rekweg, M.D., and it's from his book, Biological Therapy, Volume 1, Number 2, dated 1983. And the author of the article says, I say recent research because he has not been refuted about his findings and, in fact, has opened the eyes of other researchers, doctors, and farmers concerning the use of swine's flesh. Quoting from Professor Rekweg, quote, in consideration of wide sections of the population, it appeared strongly advisable to investigate more closely the reasons for the nocuity that is likely to cause injury, noxious, of pork, and to report on the toxic and stress factors contained in pork, that is, zootoxins. And he has in parentheses, special poisons found in pork that the body of a person who eats pork cannot break down. A possibility emerges that everyone can stay healthy by omitting toxic factors, specific pork poisons from his diet, or can regain health by observing a strict ban on pork. The fact that pork causes stress and gives rise to poisoning is known. It's obvious that this does not only apply to preparations of fresh pork, such as cold cuts, knuckles, feet, ribs, and cutlets, etc., but also to cured meat, that is, ham, bacon, and so on, and to smoked meats prepared for sausages. Consumption of freshly killed pork products causes acute responses such as inflammations of the appendix and gallbladder, biliary colic, acute intestinal catarrh, gastroenteritis with typhoid and parathyroid symptoms. I wonder if that should have been thyroid. He has typhoid in this, but we'll pass on that. And he says, as well as acute eczema, carbuncles, subauriferous abscesses, and others. These symptoms can be observed after consuming sausage meats, including salami, which contains pieces of bacon in the form of fat. And that's where the doctor quote ends. And the author of the article says, I am assuming that most of the readers and writers of Topsoil, and I interject that that is probably the source of this article, a magazine by that name, Topsoil, that most of these readers and writers are Christians and would attest that they are following the scriptures according to their faith community. However, it is interesting that the Bible has many things to teach that pertain to clean and unclean foods that we seem to either overlook or ignore. The Old Testament, in Leviticus 11, it is written, quote, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, say to the Israelites, of all the animals that you live or that live on the land, these are the ones you may eat. You may eat any animal that has a split hoof, completely divided, and that chews the cud. There are some that only chew the cud or only have a split hoof, but you must not eat them. The camel, though it chews the cud, does not have a split hoof. It is unclean for you. The coney, though it chews the cud, it splits not the hoof. It is unclean to you. The pig.
And we have to interject there.
Yes.
You and I were interested in conies some years back. They're like little animals, sort of like a rabbit, aren't they?
I think so,
and
yes.
And they live in the rocks.
I believe that's right.
Go ahead.
Going on, the pig, though it has a split hoof completely divided, does not chew the cud. It is unclean to you. In Deuteronomy 14, it says, the pig is also unclean. Although it has a split hoof, it does not chew the cud. You are not to eat their meat or touch their carcasses, unquote. Now, I can hear some say, these laws were ceremonial and nailed to the cross. However, the health laws are still in force and, in fact, are the basis of our health care systems, especially in the Western cultures. The strict prohibition of pork by the Jews and the Muslims is well known. It is suggested that these customs are religious, hygienic measures ordered by the priests because of the trichina content of pork. And now I I think this goes back to a quote from the doctor, but I'm not positive. The punctuation is uncertain. During the lean years of the war, and that, I'll interject, would be World War II, and especially those after the war, the health of the population was, practically speaking, good. Few people could eat their fill. Meat from any source was only available in small amounts. Pork was rarely ever available. There was very little fat, hardly any sugar, but there were plenty of cereals and grains, that is, bread and pastries. These were supplemented with potatoes, root crops, and fresh vegetables. During that time, there were hardly any cases of inflamed appendix and no gallbladder problems, except among those who had managed to kill a black market pig, which was rare. At the same time, rheumatism, intervertebral disc damage, and similar complaints were almost unknown. This was also true of cardiac ailments, sclerosis, and high blood pressure. And I believe he's speaking here principally in Germany. He goes on, soon after the currency reform of 1948 was established, pork products, ham, and especially bacon became readily available, and the health picture of the German population completely changed. Inflammation of the appendix, gallbladder disorders, acute eruptions of the skin, such as pyrodermia, impetigo.
Yes.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Carbuncles and pseudoriparous abscesses became commonplace.
We talked, Lou, about my mother. We had a lot of German background, and living on a farm, all they did was eat the cured ham and things like this, and she had impetigo as a young child. So that interested me in the article as one of the possible diseases. She later had terrifically bad gallbladder disease.
That's very interesting. My dad had gallbladder trouble and could eat almost no pork. We hardly ever had pork, maybe a little bit of ham.
He knew that it bothered him.
Yeah, very, very much. And if he stayed off of that and other fatty things, he seemed to be, you know, almost cured.
Go ahead.
Yes, going on. Upon treating these illnesses with chemical drugs and sulfonamides, chronic mycosis as well as a variety of side effects soon became apparent. Particularly frightening was the increase in cases of cancer at that time. A great many patients between 60 and 70 years old who had hitherto been free of disorders suddenly became ill with stomach complaints, which were found to be caused by cancer of the alimentary canal, the stomach, and the intestines. The progress of these cases was so instructive and biologically significant, or rather had such causal bases, that certain deductions as to the origin of all illnesses had to be made, this being that the basis of all illnesses are poisons. Over the years, it was found that many other illnesses, such as arthritis and chronic osteoarthritis, were to a large extent due to poor consumption, as well as some special diseases, such as leukorrhea in women, chronic fistula eruptions, not only those following ear surgery, as, for example, after otitis, but also those inherent to shot wounds suffered during the war. As these were sustained through the consumption of pork, they were slow to heal, if at all, unless a biological, especially a homeopathic cure involving complete abstinence of any and all types of pork, was undertaken. Pigs do not grow old. Firstly, due to the fact that their biological age is limited to a few years. Furthermore, they cannot live much beyond 6 years as breeders, since signs of cancer are unavoidable. Viewed overall, the pig is a very sick animal, having few muscles and small bones, but with an abundance of mucus and fatty connective tissue, suffering from fatty degeneration of the cardiac muscle and liver with possible dropsy. All its connective tissue and lymph material, including the irritants and toxic hormone factors, are consumed when the pork is eaten, thus the buildup of stress factors. This is wherein the great danger of pork is to be found. The human system is unable, in the ordinary way, to deal with the excess fat, cholesterol, growth hormones, mucus swelling substances, and other toxic factors, despite the very rich vitamin content, by the process of combustion. Nor can it eliminate it in physiological phases of excreta, even if engaged in strenuous physical work. This is where homotoxicology has brought a definite solution to the problem of the actual injurious effects of pork. Pork cannot be physiologically detoxified through ordinary detoxifying outlets, such as the urine, breathing, intestinal secretions, and secretions from the skin. Thus, it cannot be alleviated through the excretory mechanisms. The only means of detoxification is through pathological outlets, namely inflammations. And that's the end of the quote from the doctor, I believe. For the entire article, you can go online and Google Adverse Influence of Pork on Health by Hans Heinrich Reckeweg, M.D. And again, his last name is spelled R-E-C-K-E-W-E-G. In light of this very factual and informative research, it would be wise for us to reconsider what we are growing as farmers. Are we really being wise stewards of God's resources if we produce an injurious food, such as pork? Dr. Reckeweg stated in an interview that, in his informed opinion, pork is the most poisonous, most toxic food on the planet. Its use curtailed would greatly improve the health of Americans, as well as the omission of white sugar and white flour, etc. In conclusion, Dr. Reckeweg states, quote, "Prove to yourself that this information is genuine by abstaining from pork consumption. Be critical with yourself and reject all arguments. This abstinence, in addition to biological and homeopathic treatment and natural methods such as compresses, hydrotherapy, etc., will soon render improved health for yourself and all the members of your family. Disorders arising from the unintentional consumption of pork will be quick to heal through these natural processes as they allow the actual detoxification and removal of all the poisons and stress factors in pork," unquote. And a sign, his for better choices. Be blessed, James Favre.
And, Lou, we have a news bulletin, and this is some good news from Florida. Florida is the first state, and we learned about this in a headline May 3rd, the first state to ban Bill Gates' fake meat due to, quote, serious health concerns. And now we look at, from Zero Hedge, Ultra-Processed Food as Ultimate Soft Kill Weapon by TDB, Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024, originally published via Armageddon Press. We, the serfs on the techno-fiefdom, that is the modern world, can at least in theory, at least for now, forego mRNA injections. We have to interrupt again we have had this data that the mRNA in the vaccines given to pork for the last 2 or 3 years is not good. And we have to alert you again about that. The article says, even under threat of the loss of their livelihoods, although apropos to the theme of the article, this article, engineered mRNA is increasingly added to the food supply, eliminating informed consent. We can toss toxic pharmaceutical prescriptions in the trash as fast as doctors on the industry can write them. We can skirt 5G radiation via strategic relocation. As of now, most of the technocracy's bioweapons disguised as medical therapies or technological conveniences can be avoided, albeit often at great personal expense and risk. But everyone has to eat food, and everyone has to drink water. And unless you're dredging your own well water and growing your own food to the extent of complete independence, and even then, there's no protection against soil depletion or GMO, Franken-DNA, blowing onto your property from a nearby operation, the food and water supply is a target-rich environment for depopulational technocrats and the corporations, NGOs, and governments in their back pockets to exploit. I got in the habit some years ago of actually reading, one might say gasp, doing my own verboten research as a non-credentialed peasant, which the, quote, experts warned sternly against, the ingredients list on products I was considering buying in the supermarket or whatever. A rule of thumb, bit of wisdom passed down from where I can't remember, is that if you can't pronounce each of the ingredients or if the list is longer than 5 items, it's probably a good idea to take a pass. And Lou, I think you continue that.
All right.
24A. Or B, rather.
I have 23B.
Okay, that's it.
Okay. It goes on. Ultra-processed food describes food products that have been created or altered from their natural state with added sugars or artificial sweeteners, salt, additives, preservatives, or other chemicals. Added sweeteners in particular include high fructose corn syrup, sucralose, and aspartame, and they are common in ultra-processed food.
We interject there again that aspartame sometimes is put into food secretively under the wording either flavor or natural flavor. And we actually wrote to Cozy Shack that produces some puddings that Lou likes, and they wrote back a nice letter. They would never think of putting that in their products. So it's safe to eat those puddings.
Thank goodness. But going on with the article, they, that is the ultra-processed foods, also often contain additives and preservatives, like food dyes, including red 40, yellow 5, and titanium dioxide, also sodium benzoate, sodium nitrate, and sodium nitrite, brominated vegetable oil, BVO, potassium bromate, butylated hydroxanisol, BHA.
And Lou, again, we have to interrupt that we particularly avoid sodium benzoate because we've read some information about it that I think when it hooks up with vitamin C, it's particularly bad. So if you had something like orange juice or something and you had sodium benzoate in it, look out. And I think what it did, it harmed the mitochondria, those tiny, minute parts that give us our life force. So we've been seeing it in some odd things. One was a gluten-free fruitcake one time from a nice nut company, and we wrote to them and we called them, but people will not really listen unless there are a lot of people complaining. So, of course, we didn't buy that again. Go ahead. There are more chemicals, aren't there?
Yes, and let me just add that as I read some of these things, I'm thinking about what the author said. If you can't pronounce them, maybe you better not eat them.
Exactly.
And we have the BHA, and then we have BHT, which is short for butylated hydroxytoluene. And he goes on, nearly any processed food item you buy in the supermarket is likely to be chock full of not one, but dozens of these ingredients, a toxic slew of synthetic nonsense. Continuing via U.S. Right to Know, we have a quote, common ultra-processed groceries include cookies, sodas and energy drinks, fruit-flavored yogurts, margarine, packaged pastries, plant-based meats and milks, canned soups, frozen meals, sweetened breakfast cereals, granola and energy bars, hot dogs, deli meats, and potato chips. Brands like Nestle, PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, Unilever, Frito-Lay, Kraft Heinz, and Kellogg's among the world's largest manufacturers of ultra-processed foods.
Again, I have to interrupt, Lou, to say
yes.
That instead of saying GMOs on them now, sometimes you will see at the bottom it said something like there was bioengineering used in this product.
That's right. The public has been
clever.
Tipped off too much about GMOs, so
mm-hmm.
Now they've tried to be clever by changing the name. Well, the article goes on, and here we arrive at the intersection of morbid obesity, a downright epidemic in the West, if ever there was one, and one of the worst offenders on the ultra-processed roster, high fructose corn syrup, abbreviated HFCS. And here we have a quote, obesity has increased dramatically in recent decades, a phenomenon widely associated with a so-called Western diet, that is, energy-dense, highly palatable foods with high fat and sugar content. More recently, there has been an interest in the possible contribution of high fructose corn syrup to the rise in obesity.
And we interrupt again that we told some of you listeners some time back about the dangers, according to some new studies scientifically, of erythritol, and that is a sugar alcohol that was part of stevia, the natural sweetener in most products. And so now we have found that there is a product without the erythritol, and that is called stevia in the raw. You know, we must all try to cut down our intake of sugar. It's very important. And you can make some good desserts and things with using some of these good products, or just a little fruit juice in some things, and you can make pies, but you can use this, possibly the stevia in the raw. And, you know, when you're talking about the fructose, corn syrup, the high fructose, also there were studies years back that the process used to make that had some mercury. So you have to be aware that some of these heavy metals end up in some of these things. Go ahead,
Lou.
That's
right. And they go on to say that high fructose corn syrup is widely used in nearly all commercial foods, from breads to beverages. And the high fructose corn syrup consumption has risen in parallel with increasing body weights and rates of obesity. And here we have another quote. Rats maintained on a diet rich in high fructose corn syrup for 6 to 7 months show abnormal weight gain, increased circulating, and they have in brackets triglycerides, and augmented fat deposition. All these factors indicate obesity. Thus, overconsumption of HFCS, again that's high fructose corn syrup, could very well be a major factor in the obesity epidemic, which correlates with the upsurge in the use of those high fructose corn syrups. And this is Lou. Also a warning that we've been told there is, you know what? Elizabeth beat me to it. There's also mercury in those HFCSs.
And we can't emphasize it too many times.
That's right. You don't want to get that mercury. That's poisonous stuff. And we would recommend you stick with good old-fashioned maple syrup. And now here's another warning from Natural News. Consumer study reveals popular facial tissue brands contain toxic forever chemicals. This was by Olivia Cook, October 22nd, 2024. Mavivation's EPA-certified laboratory has discovered the presence of PFAS, quote, forever chemicals, unquote, in several popular facial tissue brands sold today. PFAS, or per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, are chemicals that have been used for decades to make products resistant to grease, oil, stains, and water. According to studies, exposure to PFAS in the environment has harmful effects on humans and animals. Mavivation's investigation of facial tissues. The study involved sending 13 different brands of facial tissues to an EPA-certified lab for analysis. In a related article, common bandages contain alarming levels of cancer-causing PFAS, which leach directly into the blood. These tissues, sourced from purchasers or donations by community members between January 2023 and April 2024, were not provided by the manufacturers. The selection included a range of tissue types, such as lotion-free, dye-free, soft, hypoallergenic, and sustainable options, all intended for everyday use. Surplus tissues were donated to a local community center. Testing methodology. The EPA-certified lab used a marker testing method to detect potential PFAS in the tissues, employing organic fluorine as an indicator. This marker is significant because all PFAS chemicals are carbon-based compounds containing fluorine. Findings. The analysis found that 46% of the tested facial tissue products contained PFAS, with 6 out of 13 brands showing organic fluorine levels above 10 parts per million. Notably, 66% of the products with organic fluorine detections were advertised as made from bamboo. All of the tested products with such designations claim to have environmentally friendly features, such as being made from bamboo, holding a quote-unquote sustainable certification like the Forest Stewardship Council, FSC, or being classified as tree-free. The detected organic fluorine levels range from 10 parts per million to 25 parts per million, suggesting contamination in the supply chain rather than the intentional addition of PFAS. These findings highlight that sustainability claims do not necessarily mean the absence of PFAS. They also show that bamboo-based facial tissues might have contamination issues that are not present in larger or more conventional tissue brands. The following tissue products tested at Mammovation's EPA-certified lab showed the presence of organic fluorine, a marker for PFAS. Puffs, plus lotion. Cloud paper, 100% bamboo tissue paper. Gaia's 100% recycled, treeless, and plastic-free facial tissue. Amazon Aware, 100% bamboo facial tissue. The Cheeky Panda bamboo, ultra-sustainable tissue. Who gives a crap? You smell like a fancy candle bamboo tissue. And facial tissues with minimal PFAS include these. Kirkland facial tissue, Kleenex Ultra Soft, Scotty's Premium, Up and Up, and they have in parentheses Target, kids tissue. These facial tissue products also show no detectable organic fluorine. They are made from materials that are less harmful to the environment, making them the quote-unquote best option. Among those are Caboo, C-A-B-O-O, tree-free facial tissue, EcoSol bamboo, ultra-soft facial tissues, 7th generation, 100% recycled facial tissues, whitened without chlorine bleach, 2-ply, and then we have health risks associated with PFAS, forever chemicals. These chemicals pose significant risk to human health and the environment due to their persistence, toxicity, and ubiquity. These substances can remain in the human body for years or even decades. The impact of PFAS exposure through open wounds is not well understood, but it could be a pathway for these chemicals to enter the body.
Thank you.